From the boardroom to the locker room, sport captures the imagination like little else. In this podcast, we talk to the men and women who make the big decisions and those who make the big plays to find out where sport is and, importantly, where it's going. But we do so through the only eyes that matter, those of the fan.
And a very warm welcome aboard the pirate ship at the Reeve Gauche and to the Captain's Table podcast, brought to you by Are You Not Entertained and our great friends at Loch Lomond Whiskies. I'm Giles Morgan. I'm not actually a captain, or indeed a pirate, but a vague ancestor of my family, Captain Henry Morgan, actually was one, and his family all came from Wales as well. For 30 years, I have been lucky enough to travel all over the world as a boring old marketing suit in the sports industry, which included having arguably the best job in the world as head of sponsorship at HSBC. Along that journey, I got to rub shoulders with the good, the bad, and the ugly from the world of sport. And having ditched the pinstripe suit for breeches and the red waistcoat and cutlass that befits a pirate captain, I set out to create this podcast where every fortnight I simply ask my special guests from the world of sport to share their own personal memories of being a sports fan and how that passion has affected and shaped their lives. Hi there, my hearties. Welcome back on board my pirate ship, the Reeve Gauche, and for another episode of the Captain's Table.
I'm the captain.
I am thrilled that the good folk at Loch Lomond Whiskies have generously agreed to keep me and my guests in whisky for a whole nother year. Which is bloody good, actually, because some of the guests coming up really enjoy a tipple. Embarrassingly, in some cases. And there are some stories I can not tell you about some of the guests who've been before and their behaviour on board during their various voyages. Thanks, too, to those of you who've inquired about how the crew are getting on, and in particular, the animals. Well, I'm pleased to say that they've all settled in rather well, though John the Parrot is still a bit sceptical about having Cat the Cat on board. But she is in turn rather skittish around Bruce the dog. And all of them are terrified of Paul the steward and his gammy leg. Such is life at sea. And I suppose my role is a bit like a UN peacekeeper most of the time and keeping them fed. My next guest is an American and a Texan to boot, which is my first of both on this particular show. He is a major winner from 2002, but now Rich Beem is known best for his wonderful golf commentary on television all over the world. He's also a brand ambassador for Loch Lomond Whiskies, which means contractually I have to be especially nice to him, but also means we can talk a little bit about whisky. I can hear his footsteps on the gangplank right now, so let's welcome him on board. Rich Beem, a very warm welcome on board and welcome to the captain's table. Pull up a chair and make yourself at home.
Will do, Captain Giles. Thank you very kindly.
Well, your bags are going to be taken to your very plush cabin by the slightly gammy-legged steward, Paul. I suggest you don't leave any valuables out in the cabin. Paul is, after all, a pirate, and he might pinch a few things. And don't let his drooping jowls and gammy leg deceive you. He's still a quick runner. Watch out, too, as you sort of familiarise yourself around the Reeve Gauche, around the ship. Watch out for the parrot, whose name is John. He's a fierce bugger, and he might peck you. And watch out, too, for the ship's dog. His name is Bruce, named after Springsteen. He's a stunning fox red Labrador, but he's cute, but might eat your socks. And finally, please meet the ship's cat, who's called Cat, who is a Maine Coon and partial to attacking toes. Those are the ground rules. Rich, first things first, I need to get you a drink. Now, usually pirates and their guests drink rum before they're executed, but we're not going to execute you and we're not going to serve you rum. Regular listeners will know that this is a classy ship, and so the usual tipple of choice is therefore a Loch Lomond scotch. It's a single malt. Delicious! But Rich Beem, you're different, because I understand that you have your own cocktail called the Beamer, dreamt up by you and the fine folk at Loch Lomond. Fancy telling me and Paul what it is and how we can make it.
Well, it's pretty easy. It's got 12-year-old Loch Lomond whiskey in it. And then we're going to add, it's going to be a full 35 milliliter of that. And then we're going to do 5 milliliters of peach schnapps, 5 milliliters of lemon juice. And then you take that in the shaker, mix it all around. And then once you pour it in over ice, then you're going to fill up the rest of the cup, what's left, with ginger beer. And we're going to get after it. It is a very delightful drink. It's good for the open waters where the sun is basking on your skin and you're just hanging out with some friends.
Oh, man. And what time of day do you think we can have our first tipple? I mean, this sounds banging.
Listen, I think at this moment in time where the world is, I don't think we should hold any judgment at what time folks want to start drinking. So I say, let's go for it.
It's a breakfast cocktail, my favorite type. Very good. Rich Beam, look, a lot's been said about your wonderful career. You're a golfer of great renown. You're a major winner, for goodness sake. But I have no qualifications to talk about great sports people's careers. But I am a fan of sport, like many of us are. And I'm fascinated to know. I think you're a proud Texan. What were your first early sporting memories as a young person growing up, as a fan of sport?
Oh, wow. I'd be hard remiss to say, you know, that kind of growing up I didn't really grow up in Texas, but I grew up close enough, Las Cruces, New Mexico. And then from there, we went to, because of my dad's job, we moved to Panama and Berlin, Germany. But my first ones that I remember, my mom was infatuated with a gentleman by the name of Earl Campbell, who, funny enough, played football at the University of Texas, which is, I reside now in Austin. But he was playing for the Houston Oilers at the time. And the reason why she was infatuated with him is because he had thighs that were the largest on any single man of all time. And it is, if you see him and when you watch him run, he truly looks like a horse. I'm not too sure how anybody ever wanted to stand in front of him and try and tackle him, but obviously they did, and they got run over quite a bit. But I remember just watching. That's like the earliest moments I remember watching any kind of sporting event on TV was watching a football game with Earl Campbell, just with my mom and my dad, I think, but just running over guys. And I thought to myself, holy cow, this guy's quite extraordinarily large. And my dad said, oh, his thighs are as big as my head. And I'm like, no, it can't be as big as my head. No, like this. And yeah, I know it had been about three times the size of my head, as small as I was back in the day. So that's kind of my earliest ones.
You said that you traveled around through your father's work. So did you get to go to sporting events either in Mexico or Germany growing up? Did you get to see live sporting events at all?
No, I never. In fact, I don't even know when the first live sporting event that I would have gone to would have been. To be fair, probably not until sometime in college, you know, and even that would have been just a college football game. And then, you know, probably a professional baseball game might have been my first true professional event I've ever been to. But, kind of being out of, well, I mean, does professional ice hockey in Germany, does that count?
Yeah, well, it kind of does. So did you get into soccer, into what we properly call football, but you guys have to change
big
it?
Big time.
Right, in Mexico and Germany.
Yeah, in Germany. And so when we lived in Germany, I went to Berlin American High School, and we were always pretty good. We were, we played against other high schools, American high schools, military-based high schools in Germany. But I remember one year we hosted a team from the UK. Couldn't tell you where they were from, but I know they're from the UK. And every single girl at all our school thought they were all the Beatles, right? I mean, they were larger than life. They all had accents, so that made them instantly handsome. And so we played this match against them, and we got thumped. I mean, it must have been 12 to, we might have scored one goal, but we got absolutely creamed because they would play in a triangle. they would play keep away, you know, in triangles. And it was just, they would just kind of move their triangles down the field. And being typical Americans, we played, you know, we played, let's kick it down the field as far as we can. We're going to run faster than you, and we're going to get it into the goal. And yet that just didn't work. So, you know, typical Americans, we just didn't understand how to play the game the way that you guys are. And it's just, we never understood the game of keep away. And so once we kind of learned that a little bit, then we became really good. I was probably a sophomore when they came over and played against us. So I got about 2 years of doing it. And that's when I really started understanding the game. But I tell you what, these kids absolutely crushed us. And it was a completely different game. And so I was already in love with soccer before then. And so that just reaffirmed what it is. And so I love watching the Premier League. It's an extraordinary game watching them play, how they play it.
So your early sporting heroes, being a sort of a traveling American young boy, were they American sports stars, or were they or were they sort of European footballers?
Nah, they wouldn't have been European footballers, because funny enough, I mean, I never really got into, because we wouldn't have seen the Premier League, you know, on any of our TVs. We still had the American Americans growing up. I mean, you know, to be fair, I didn't really have a whole lot of sporting heroes that I truly, truly loved. I mean, you know, football wise, American football wise, you know, Dan Marino was kind of a guy that I looked up to, just because he played for the Miami Dolphins. And for whatever reason, I like the Miami Dolphins, but I'd never had a true hero, in pretty much any sport. But then I remember 1986, when Jack Nicklaus won the Masters, we were watching in Germany. So when Nicklaus won, it was probably about 2 or 3 in the morning, our time. And so I stayed up and watched that with my dad, which was great. And that was kind of the first time I really ever got into golf, and I got into golf with my dad, and obviously Nicklaus would have been my hero. And so I would have gotten, you know, I liked a lot of golfers, after that. But as far as, you know, in baseball and football and basketball, I mean, Michael Jordan, I think, was every American kid's, you know, hero. I think that if you liked any kind of sport as a kid in the U.S., I'd say 95% of them just loved Michael Jordan, just because of what he could do. He was so extraordinary that it was, you weren't expecting to see it. And yet you saw it all the time. So he probably would have been the first person that I think I would really recognized a lot.
So when did you know that you were quite good at golf as opposed to a good golfer? When did you start thinking, when were you start to be told, Rich, actually, you've got something here. This is time to take this to the next level.
Oh gosh. Funny enough, Captain Giles, I never got
good man.
Yeah,
good man.
I have the respect. I got the respect.
Otherwise, you'll be walking the plank. So well done. Listen, it's all about manners.
I got a feeling later on I might be stumbling down the plank, you know, but that's okay. you know, funny enough, I was a late bloomer to the game, even though I had a decent college experience. I was never a first team All-American. I was never a great college player. I was good, but I wasn't great. I was good at the people that I was playing against, but I was in a different league versus the best in the game at that time. You know, the Phil Mickelsons, the Robert Gomez would have been there. David Bergoglio comes to mind. I think everybody from the state.
So was Phil Mickelson is your contemporary? We're all the same kind of age. So you grew up with him, and did you know that he was something special then, as opposed to you and all of you being on the college circuit? Did he have something special?
Yeah, he won the NC2As 3 out of the 4 years in a row. 3 out of the 4 years, won a tournament when he was an amateur. Yeah, we all knew that he was something special. But, you know, once again, and this continues to this day, as great as he is, you know, when I first met him, we were playing at a tournament at my home golf course in New Mexico, and he just was happened to ask a couple of questions about the golf course. And so he was asking about the par 5 18th. You got to hit kind of around some trees. And he goes, well, can I hit it underneath the trees on 18 with a driver to get it home in 2? And I kind of snickered. I go, only if you're stupid, you know? I mean, I don't think I said it, but I'm like, I guess you can. I just never thought of trying to hit driver. And yet that's who he was. And you kind of thought, well, this guy's just, he's crazy. Why would anybody want to try that? And yet that's exactly what he's done his entire life. He's hit shots that nobody else has hit. So yeah, I knew that he was going to be a big deal in the golfing ranks. And it was pretty obvious just by watching his results.
And as you young men all then left college and started to earn your way on the tour, one of the things, as you know, I've been involved in the game of golf in my former life before I became a pirate. And there's always seems to me that there are certain moments in the golfer's week where there is downtime, where it can't all be practice or doing sort of sponsor work or whatever. Do you or did you get time to go in as you were going around the country, your own country, see other sports and watch football or baseball or basketball or hockey or whatever it may be? Were you able as golfers to be fans of sport, or was it all golf, golf, golf?
No, for me, it was when I left the golf course, I would try and find anything to do to preoccupy my time. And baseball actually is a great way of doing it, because it's like cricket. There's a lot of, you know, moving around, shuffling parts, but it's a very slow moving game. You know, unless it's a one day test, but you know, we don't have those things. We just have one game, you know, a game a day for the most part, but I would try and go to find as many games as I could, just because I just love the game of baseball. It's like, I've never been to a cricket stadium, but when you walk in and you see what we call the field, you guys call the pitch, there's just a different aroma and atmosphere, I think, than it comes with football, than it comes with hockey or basketball. It's a completely different feel about it. And I think baseball is a lot more laid back because it's not moving as quickly as the other sports. And I think that you just kind of take time to just soak up the atmosphere. I love going because I love people watching. I think people fascinate and scare me all in the same breath. And I love going and looking at people and just being like, wow, I wonder what their background is.
So is baseball in a way a catharsis for you, that you can people watch, you could get away from the golf course or whatever it was, that the kids or whatever it was, is that it's a pastime sport where you could decongest?
Absolutely. Absolutely. It was the best. You know, you go out to in Milwaukee, you go to the Brewer Stadium, and back in the day, you get a ticket for $5 and you can go sit way, way high up and just look down on the field. And yet that's just where the everyday folks were at. Even though I, you know, probably could have made a phone call and gotten really close to the field, I'd take the $5 ticket, go up there, buy it, you know, and we drink, you know, $2 beers, you know, 16, 18, 24 ounce, $2 beers, and just sit there and watch a baseball game for 4 hours, you know, not 4 hours, but 2.5, 3 hours.
Two and a half.
It was great. It was a great way to get away and just forget about what it is that I was doing. And, you know, even though you're having fun and getting away from it, you're still paying attention to the other athletes and what they're doing and seeing how they do their sport, how they play their sport. But it's a great way to get away from it all for one day and just enjoy it.
Well, you're quite right. The similarities with cricket, which is, I'm a massive fan of cricket, are similar. But the difference is, I only went once to the Yankee Stadium, the old Yankee Stadium.
Oh, God.
Yeah. And I'd never been to baseball before, but obviously, being a cricket fan, I thought I'd enjoy it. And I did. Derek Jeter was playing, and he hit a home run, which was cool. But I remember it most because I was with some guests who were some relatively important. So we had quite nice seats, but in the bleachers. Anyway, someone kept on coming down the steps with hot dogs, and I've built for comfort, not speed. And I remember having indigestion that lasted about a week afterwards. As I just they kept on handing me hot dogs, and I kept on taking them.
I mean, it's not just the hot dogs; it's the peanuts, it's the popcorn, it's the cotton candy, and let's gonna wash it down with either a big beer or a Coke or something. And nothing is served in small amounts, as you well know, no. Captain Giles. Nothing is served in small amounts anywhere in America, but especially at the ballpark, it is absolutely. And these days, though, the menu has changed drastically. You can almost get, you know, a steak at the ball game. You can get so many different types of food. It literally is quite amazing. I've seen some pretty. I've been to a number of stadiums, but I think the new one in Atlanta is got the most eclectic menu, and the food is just out of this world. You can still get the hot dogs, though. So you can still come over and enjoy a hot dog every now and again.
It's probably time. What's your favorite stadium in the world? I mean, is it a baseball stadium? Is there somewhere that you love to go?
Yeah, it's got to be Wrigley Field by a long shot. Cubbies, the west side of Chicago. It's such an iconic stadium. In the summertime, the ivy's growing up over the walls. For the longest time, they never played night games. It was day games only because they didn't have the stadium lights. They finally put stadium lights in. Probably 15 years ago now, maybe longer than that, but it was just one of those ballparks you go. It hasn't changed that much. They tried and renovated, to help out with the times, with the suites and things like that. But for the most part, on the inside of the stadium, it hasn't changed a whole lot. The outside of it has, especially after they won the World Series a few years back. And it's amazing just going there and just, it's not even being in the stadium sometimes. It's also walking around and just visiting the shops, the places around the stadium that also make it worthwhile.
And let me ask you, if you were to invite me to Wrigley Field, that could happen. And we went round and we've talked about hot dogs, but you were to say to me, come on, big man, we're going to go and have some proper fan food. You and I, we're going to really tuck in. What would you have? What would you recommend I have? The quintessential.
If I was going to have anything, I mean, I'd take you over right across the street to the Cubby Bear and, I'd probably get a big hot dog and then a warm pretzel and wash it down with a cold beer. I mean, that is, for me, that is washing baseball food right there. And then, maybe late in the game we'll have some peanuts and whatnot, but you have to have a hot dog. That's just, it's almost sacrilegious if you don't go to the baseball game and not have a hot dog.
I am all over it. And Talbot, when you watch sport, baseball or anything else, are you emotional? When was the last time you cried watching sport at any level other than your own performance, good or bad? But I mean, genuinely, as a fan, do you weep if there are moments of triumph or great irritation?
Yeah, I think I've had some exhilarating moments. I think that watching other players get emotional certainly gets you into it. I think watching the Cubs finally win after, I can't tell you how many years, 100 years, in the years before that, the Boston Red Sox accomplishing something that hadn't been done in their franchise in 90 some odd years. I just think that watching these athletes go out there and not only just for themselves, but the history behind it, the years and years of losing and not being able to win and bring a championship back to their hometown, because there's 32 baseball teams. You keep watching them, and year after year they keep losing and they keep losing, and then to watch the Cubs win the World Series in 2016, and just listening to the stories about how many generations of families have gone without watching the Cubs win the World Series, and all of a sudden they do, and their whole families are just, they're breaking down. It's just, and the players know this. The players know that these people in Chicago have been living and dying by everything they do, and to watch them win it and knowing how much joy they brought to the Cubs fans and watching them break down, I think it'd be maybe tough not to be a little emotional about that. I think it was one of those times where you're just like, this is something that, my parents didn't get to see. My grandparents never got to see. I just watched something, and it's just a sport, right? But listen, there's generations of folks that never got a chance to watch the Chicago Cubs win the World Series and see that happen. That was really cool.
That's amazing. Now, as we both know, Loch Lomond Whiskies are the spirit of the Open Golf Championship. And therefore, I need to ask you a few questions about golf, which is mad, as I'm widely credited as the worst golfer ever to have played on any professional circuit in the old days, and it's true. I can't even deny it.
Trust me. No matter how bad you think you have been or are, Captain Giles, I can promise you, every single professional golfer will say, "Nah, I got you beat. let me watch you once." No, I can tell you a story about this one guy. We have plenty of stories.
Oh, thank God for that. Although I will tell you a funny story. I was playing in Turnberry a caddy, 82 years old. He's called Wee Jimmy. And we went round. It was an HSBC event. And at the end, I said, and I'd lost about 200 golf balls. And I said, Jimmy, am I or am I not the worst golfer you have ever played with, caddying in 55 years at Turnberry? And he looked up to me. His glasses were steamed over. It was raining terribly. And he went, oh, no, sir. No, you're not. No, no. You're not. But you're right up there. Anyway, this is all about you, not me. Right. So what is your favourite moment at the Open Championship? Obviously, Loch Lomond are a sponsor of the Open Championship. Wonderful. One of the oldest major. But either as a fan or as a player or as a broadcaster, do you have a moment that sticks out of the Open Championship and what it means to you?
Probably the first time going there. And funny enough, it was in Carnoustie. In 1999, when Paul Lawrie won, Jean Vandeveld made triple, and I played, and my dad was really excited about going, so I took my dad with me. So when I got over there, and I'm playing the practice rounds, and I'm looking at how hard this golf course is with the rough and everything else, and I just kind of, I'm kind of thinking to myself, if this is how the Open Championship is every single year, I want no part of this because I can't survive this. This is just not easy. And I think that, you know, just experiencing the walk down 18 and you see the grandstands on both sides. I think for any golfer that has ever gotten a chance to play in the Open, the first time they ever see that, it gives you goosebumps. It brings shivers down your spine because you're like, this is incredible. And I just look at the Open as I think one of the coolest golf tournaments in the world because of the atmosphere with the grandstands, when the patrons or the fans, they walk through the Open zone and they walk through everything going on and the experience that everybody has. And I've gotten to see it so much differently from a golfer now to a commentator for Sky Sports, Captain Giles. And I take the time now and I walk around everywhere just to experience it all, because I think the Open is so much fun. Everybody there is in a great mood, whether or not they've visited the Loch Lomond, Whiskey's tent or not, but they're in such a good mood, and it is just there. And everybody is so knowledgeable about the game. You know, some players you can hit it to 30, 40 feet, and that's a hell of a shot from where you were. But I think everything about the Open just it brings back so many memories. I think probably one of my favorite memories is watching Shane Lowry win. I think that being a part of that and knowing Shane like I know him and watching he and Bo walk up the 72nd hole, and I just think that what he accomplished, we go back to, you know, having the entire country, you know, on your shoulders, everybody's pulling for you. I mean, the pressure he must have felt was immense. I mean, Rory McIlroy admitted the pressure that he had was immense. I just think what Shane did that week and to carry himself like he did, especially playing well on Saturday, and then knowing that, you know, it's going to be one of the hardest rounds of golf he's ever had on Sunday, and yet keep his composure, hit some great shots down the stretch. To me, I just find that to be probably the best Open that I've ever seen. I think that amazing. What he did is just phenomenal.
Amazing. And just quickly, if you could have your dream, or not even pro-am team, am-am team, but if you could have the four ball, your captain, who would you have? It could be anybody in the world. Who would you have in your four ball?
Okay. This is funny, but I when I was a younger man, I had a different four ball. And then as I've gotten a little bit older, I've gotten a little bit more sentimental about it. But I also threw one in funny little caveat in there. So I'd be myself and then my father and my grandfather and Ben Hogan. Now, the reason why I picked Ben Hogan is for a number of reasons. Both my dad and granddad loved Ben Hogan, and he was an unbelievable champion. But my granddad, my dad, and Hogan were all tremendous smokers. They could smoke a cigarette with the best of them. I'm willing to put my dad and granddad up against Ben Hogan about who could smoke the best. I think my dad can take him in that department. I mean, Ben Hogan had that cool little cap on, but I'm telling you, I think that if nothing else, they would find commonality in the love of golf and smoking.
What a fantastic formula.
And I know that smoking these days is so taboo, it seems like, in the world of sport, but listen, this is my day. This is what I get to do.
Exactly right.
And listen, I think that, you know, having those two gentlemen in my life and being around smoking all my life, and I never liked it. It always was disgusting to me. But I just think, you know what? I'd love to play golf and watch them, all three of them, just enjoy the game of golf, have a smoke, and it'd be fun to play golf with all three of them.
And talking of that, as a pro and in the many pro-ams you've had to play on, have you ever been played golf with someone that you've been scared to play with? Not because they're a golfer, but because of perhaps who they are, or that there is someone from business or from sport or theatre or film that has just, you felt intimidated by them because of who they are. Has that ever happened?
I mean, it's happened a couple of times. I don't think it's ever been, you know, funny enough. I don't know if anybody that I've played with captive industry wise, or anybody like that, even being around, you know, former presidents a few times, like I have been, haven't played with any, but being around them, I just never felt that uncomfortable. But I think that playing golf with a couple of them, a couple of athletes, and one other person in particular, would have been the last one that I played with, would have been Michael Flatley. And I think Michael, when he listens to this, if he listens to this, we'd be like, what in the world is he talking about? So Michael Flatley was Lord of the Dance, right? River Dance, all that. And huge here in the US
I'm imagining he had a very good posture and stance.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And dressed to the nines. And I can't tell you how, when we're walking around playing a practice round, how many people were coming up to him and just, they couldn't have cared less who I was. They wanted every single part of him. And I'm like, I'm over in this man's world, you know, where he's adored by everybody, it seems like, in the aisles. And yet, you know, I feel like I'm playing pretty good lately and this and that. And I'm playing with Michael Flatley, and he's blowing me out of the water as far as, like, I mean, nobody's cheering for a single shot that I hit. They're all over him. So after a while, I'm like, okay, this is getting I'm getting a little nervous here. Like, I don't want to screw it up in front of him, you know? And it was so bizarre, and he couldn't have been any nicer. But he was, as an entertainer, I mean, he was absolutely dynamic. The only other time I was ever nervous, super nervous about playing with somebody, funny enough, and it wasn't so much who they are, but it was, I was playing with Jimmy Fallon was one of them. And this is before he came super big. Jimmy Fallon, Carson, he does the Today Show, Carson Daly. And there's one other person, but I was so nervous about playing with Jimmy Fallon, because I thought he was going to do something mid swing, and I just never felt comfortable because I thought he was going to start telling jokes or doing Bill Murray and dragging ladies into bunkers and throwing them down. So I was nervous about that, but no, I've always been in awe of what other people do as far as athletes go. So, you know, I think you don't get intimidated by him, but you respect him, and you want to play your best for them and in front of them. And I think that's just a natural reaction.
I think it's one of the great privileges, I would say, having sort of been around the golf circus, is actually the greatest privilege for the professional golfer is who the professional golfer gets to play golf with beyond professional golfers, because the great and the good are always wheeled out. And what a wonderful way, particularly as the pro golfer, you get to be the good one. So you're always going to be, you've got the whip hand to an extent, but at the same time, you know, to play with a former president of the United States would be an amazing thing.
And one other thing to add on to that, Captain Giles, real quick, is that when I would go play the Dunhill Links, I would get paired with guys that I may not have known, cricketers. I know cricketers. I know I've been paired with rugby players and these giants of sport that we don't know outside of our country. And so I would be so naive about who it is I'm playing with. And people were just going, oh my God, oh my God, this. I'm like, oh, you mean this dude? Yeah. You know, I mean, I had no idea. And I feel embarrassed about that. But working for Sky Sports Golf, I understand that a whole lot more now. But I got to say, it was always funny for me to go over and play in the Dunhill Links and playing with these guys that have just, that are considered gods. Like, you know, the cricketers are always the ones that people just are in awe of for whatever reason. And footballers as well, but the cricketers always seem to be the ones that everybody loves. So anyways, I was...
But it's wonderfully disarming that, though. I think it's always very helpful if you don't have the faintest idea who someone is.
That's true.
And it means that you meet each other on a level. And off you go. I think it's a very good lesson. I think I was given a good lesson in life. If you look up to someone, they'll look down on you. So just keep a level gaze. And I think it's not a bad adage. Now, we've come to the part of the show, which is called the Captain's Broadside, which is where I ask you a series of relatively quick-fire questions, which you have to do your best to answer. So, Rich, you've come aboard my fine pirate ship, the Reeve Gauche, and we're free to sail wherever your heart desires. So firstly, I mean, I know you're a bit landlocked at the moment. Let's pretend you're by the sea. But where can I sail you to? Anywhere in the world.
I want to go to Fiji.
Oh, that's a lot. Oh, we're going to be drinking a lot of your Beamer cocktails.
Yeah,
my God.
We are, but I've never been to Fiji. I want to go to Fiji.
Okay, well, we will get the sextant set up and we will be navigating shortly. As my guest at this beautiful British oak table that you can see in front of you, we're going to feed you every night very well. But you get to choose your three-course meal tonight for dinner because you are my guest of honour. So what is your three-course meal of choice? What can we get you?
We're going to start off with chips and guacamole.
Yep,
and then we're going to do fajita chicken enchiladas. Nice. With green sauce and a couple of eggs over easy on top with some sour cream.
Good.
And then for dessert, we're going to have margaritas.
This is going to be the best trip. We may have to go to Fiji and then stay a while. Now, Rich, you'll also see that as you padded around the ship that we've given you the beautiful ensuite cabin, which comes with a power shower, which is a little unlikely given it's a 17th century boat, but bear with me. What song does Rich Beam sing in the shower?
I may have to go with old standard. Don Henley, The Boys of Summer.
Very good. Okay. And the crew will love
hearing
it.
It's one of those songs that I will listen to. And it's just one of my favorite songs.
Do you have a decent voice?
No, it's crap. It's horrible.
And tell me, do you remember your first ever album that you bought? We're old enough to have bought albums.
Yeah.
In the 33s.
Funny enough, I don't even know why I remember this, but I do. It was Boston. The Boston album, that's the one that's More Than a Feeling, was their hit song off it. I couldn't tell you which album it was off of, but I remember it was a Boston album. And I think the reason I bought it is because Boston, when they put it on the little disc right there inside of the vinyl, it had a little spaceship said Boston on it. So I thought, this is awesome. I got to have it. You know, it had nothing to do with the music, I'm sure.
And do you remember the first ever live gig you went to, concert you ever went to?
Huey Lewis and the News in Berlin, Germany. In fact, I have actually played golf with Huey Lewis and I told him that. And he goes, funny enough, we would go back to Berlin every year because they just absolutely loved Berlin, and they loved playing gigs there. But that was the first time I ever, my first ever live concert, Huey Lewis and the News.
Wow. And do you remember your first car, the first car you ever bought, and what was it?
It was a 1971 orange Super Beetle. It wasn't just a normal Beetle, it was a VW Super Beetle. It was orange, and I bought it for $1,100 or $1,200, I forget which.
And is it the car that you still love more than any other that you've ever had?
I would like to get a VW and get one that would be restored. Yes, I want it to be a little bit better running than the one that I originally had. Yes, but I would love to get one restored. We have, just like you guys do over there, we have a show here on the Velocity Channel, and there's a guy out of Salt Lake City. And I forget the name. Oh, it's called Bitchin' Rides. And this guy's out of Salt Lake, and he does some unbelievable work. If you ever get a chance to just YouTube one of his shows, but he's got some stuff, and he did a VW Bug. And I just go, that is incredible. I mean, it's just, it's a work of art.
And tell me, Rich, do you have a hidden talent? I mean, we know you're a golfer. Now you're a commentator to golf. But is there something that you can do that people would know, like, you know, play the harmonica? Or is there something that you've got, you can juggle chainsaws? I don't know. Is there something you can do that we don't know?
Well, I can juggle. Yeah, I can juggle. I taught myself how to juggle. I can make people believe things that come out of my mouth at a tremendous rate, Captain.
You're a magician. Brilliant. You should go into politics. I know. Damn, the election's over. It's too late. You missed your chance.
No hidden talents other than that.
No hidden. That's a pretty good one. And tell me, given that this is a pirate ship, and go with me again on this, and pirates smuggled a lot, as you know, in the past. So we're set up well for smuggling stuff. Is there a treasured possession that you have, inanimate, but just something that you have in your life that you've collected that if we could smuggle for you and put in a treasure chest and bury to keep safe for all time, is there something along your life that you'd want to keep that is just more valuable than anything?
You know, funny, I do keep an employee card from the place that I first worked. When I sold cell phones and car stereos, I have that employee card still. And I've always kept it to remind myself that this is where I was, this is where I'm at, but I could always go back there, and that's just how the world works sometimes. You know, you better stay motivated, or you can end up right back where you started off from. So I keep that employee card and just whenever I kind of think that, you know, things may not be going my way, or I'm a little down in the dumps, take a look at that employee card and be like, you know what? I'm doing okay. So I think that's one that I would keep just to remind myself that, you know, you're doing okay.
Well, we'll take that. We'll look after it. And whilst we're drinking the Beamer cocktail on the way to Fiji, so 6 weeks later, we might go and have a look at that as well. Rich, we could talk for hours, and we will be, because we're going to Fiji, but we better stop. Need to unpack. You need to dress for dinner. You can't possibly, well, neither of us can look like we currently are. It would be a disgrace. You've been a wonderful guest, and it's a real pleasure to have you on board the Reeve Gauche and the Captain Sable. As I mentioned, we are that classy ship, and although, you know, we're not charging you for this voyage to Fiji, the guys at Loch Lomond are going to give us both a bottle of 12-year-old malt to help us on our way. So you get that as well, which is pretty cool. And it only remains for me to say thank you very much for your time and coming on board.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me on the ship, Captain Giles. That was fun. I enjoyed that.
Thanks, Rich.
Well, how brilliant that was to have Rich Beam join us. What a top bloke. Just lovely to have golfers who are down to earth and just say it as they see it. For all our listeners, we're so grateful for the support of the show, which grows month after month. And so we don't want you to leave with your cellars empty either. So our friends at Loch Lomond Whiskies have very kindly once again given away a bottle of their 12-year-old single malt whisky. To be in with a chance of winning this bottle, head over to their Twitter page at Loch Lomond Malts and follow their instructions to enter. I have to be honest, I have no idea who is coming up in the first show of the new year, but with guests as illustrious as Lordy and Botham, Sir Matthew Pinsent, Sir Gareth Edwards, and Brian Habana, to name but a few, I promise you, you are in for further treats in 2021. That will be, or the next show will be in a month or so, just after the new year, So keep looking out for them on Twitter and social media. I will post. From all my colleagues at Are You Not Entertained, particularly James, the producer, and my co-hosts, Grant and Roger, and of course, Loch Lomond Whiskies, thank you. Thank you for the support for the shows we make. We're so grateful for your time. And so if you get a chance, please tell your friends about us and get them to find us on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your pod fix by searching Are You Not Entertained? If you want to follow me or get in touch or abuse me or whatever, you can do so on Twitter at GilesMorgan71 or via my email at giles@gilesdmorgan.com. So until we meet again in the new year under the captain's table, please keep your cannon decks clear, your bar well stocked, and always remember to have a packet of fisherman's friends about your person, just in case. Goodbye.